I'm delighted now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Quinn Mander. He is director and actor in Threshold Arts Collective's production of Twelfth Night, which opens this Friday. It's Friday and Saturday at 7 o'clock at the Scottish Rite Temple. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much, Mary Charlotte.
So Twelfth Night is a great play to perform at Christmas time.
Yeah, it is, actually. It's sort of like the premier holiday comedy for Shakespeare. What's interesting to me about this is the whole play is kind of this carnival and revelry. You know, the whole Illyria is turned upside down for love. You know, everyone's drunk on passion. And the working out of the themes of what different kinds of love there are, how passion is played out in people's relationships, what true intimacy really is, what it really means to connect with someone, what it means to long for someone and not really know them, and how much you can really credit that. All of those are beautiful themes, but it's Twelfth Night itself was originally a holiday that was celebrated, you know, for either the visit of the Magi or it was the visit of the Magi, I believe, on January 6th was the date that was given. But it turned into this festival. And I think the reason for the title of this play, Twelfth Night or What You Will, and What You Will is very telling to me. You know, it's sort of passion is given free rein. You know, everyone sort of follows their impulses. And oftentimes to their detriment, you know. Just like in real life. Yes, as I know all too well.
As we all do.
But yeah, and it's interesting to me. I mean, the primary, most obvious love story is between Viola and Duke Orsino. But people like Sir Toby Belch is the master of revels, you know, and he refuses to restrain himself in any way, shape, or form. And the interesting thing to me is a character like Festy the Fool, who sort of has a slight detachment from all the stuff that's going on, enjoys all the revelry, at times winds everyone up, and because, you know, really, and Festy, by the way, is we've cast as a woman, Vanessa Rios Ivaez, who's an outstanding Santa Fe actor, wonderful actress. She's playing our Festy, and, you know, Festy sort of winds everyone up, but, you know, she has several lines that sort of indicate, you know, the sooner or later the bill will have to be paid.
Right.
You know?
And that's, I mean, I guess what you might call the karma of
right.
love and passion
yeah.
comes home, even in comedies.
Even in comedies. Well, and the thing, too, that's interesting to me is that all the reason this stuff is funny is because it's all so true. I mean, you know, we do, we get ourselves in all kinds of trouble when we follow our passions in a way that is perhaps less than wise.
And wisdom just are not, they don't go together.
They're not necessarily commensurate, no. They're not really, yeah, no, they're not at all. And it's interesting to me in working on the relationship between Viola and Orsino to look at the way that both of them view love. I mean, the scene where Viola really confronts him about his pining for Olivia and what it really amounts to in cash money.
Now, of course, these are characters who are always wearing costumes of the opposite sex and
yep.
just like in opera, highly unlikely misinterpretations happen.
Yes, right. Yes. There's a lot of, you know, willful suspension, as we say.
Yes.
Disbelief. Quite a lot of disbelief is asked of the audience. But the interesting thing to me about Orsino is that, you know, he's desperately in love with a woman whom he's never really interacted with, whom I'm not certain he's ever actually seen in public very often.
Now, set up the story for us. What are we talking about?
So the story is basically that Viola and her brother Sebastian were both on a sea voyage. They shipwrecked, and they both landed separately, both of them thinking the other had perished in the shipwreck. And Viola comes to shore in Illyria, which is under the rule of Duke Orsino. And she's trying to find a way. She has no resources left to her. She's a woman alone in a world, you know, that's a patriarchy, essentially. There are very few options for her to survive. And she's got to find a way to make a living. And she at the very beginning, you know, she says, well, I'll either, the sea captain tells her about Duke Orsino, and then also tells her about Countess Olivia. These are the two nobles in the area. And she says, well, you know, she would prefer to serve the Countess, but there's no way to get into her household because the Countess is in mourning over the loss of her brother and father. So she says, well, I guess I better go serve Duke Orsino. And in order to do so, and to be taken seriously, and also to protect myself, I'm going to disguise myself as a man. So she does, and she goes into the service of Duke Orsino, instantly gains his trust, because Viola is an amazing and unique person. And he recognizes that instantly. And he can trust her in a way that he can't trust his other courtiers. So they become fast friends. And she goes by the name of Cesario, as her disguise name, as a boy. And he employs her to woo Olivia on his behalf. And unfortunately for her, she's fallen desperately in love with him. So, and the comedy unfolds because as Viola goes to woo Olivia on Orsino's behalf, Olivia falls in love with a saucy youth who's come as the messenger. And so we have the beginnings of a pretty desperate love triangle, which could, you know, which never ends well.
Right.
Except in Shakespeare. And there's a whole, but that's the main plot. And there's so much fun with characters like Mariah and Sir Toby Belch, you know, who sort of have a contentious relationship, but also are deeply affectionate to one another. You know, Olivia's whole household, her cousin and or uncle, Sir Toby Belch, who is, as I said before, the master of revels, a drunkard, and who is entertaining a visiting knight, Sir Andrew Aguecheek, who he's basically using for money, you know, and gulling him into keeping him in drink while trying to get Sir Andrew to woo Olivia as well. And Sir Andrew is not, shall we say, the most appealing candidate, you know. So there's a lot of hijinks that ensue there. And then you have Olivia's steward, Malvolio, who is so self-satisfied that no one likes him. And he's horrible to everybody else in Olivia's household. So they develop a revenge plot to make him look a fool, and they drop a letter that they forge in Olivia's hand to convince him that Olivia is in love with him, and that in order to demonstrate his affection in return, he must do the following things, which are to wear yellow stockings. We're doing this sort of, you know, fairly period.
Right.
So he's got to wear yellow stockings, cross-gartered, which means the lacing that holds the garters up has to cross back and forth across his legs, which was an appalling, horrible, foppish fashion of the time.
For men?
Yes. Oh, yes. They had garters that would hold their stockings up, but this was like a lacing that, you know, mm-hmm. they would do. So, and then, for a man who never smiles, the last command was for him to smile constantly. So, which, because Olivia's in mourning, would be horribly out of place. So he does so, and then he comes in and woos her in this outfit, and smiling, and smiling, and smiling, and terrifies her, and doesn't somehow clock to the fact that this is all a setup.
Right.
So, yeah. There's that going on, and it's ridiculous hijinks. Absurd in the extreme. Very fun. And then on the other hand, you have this very moving relationship between Viola and Orsino, which is quite sincere, quite deep. And I think the most important thing that I wanted to say about the way the play examines and asks us, I think, in a very modern way, to broaden our understanding of what love actually is. We tend in our culture, I think anyway, to deify romantic love. That's the example of the true deep intimacy between people. You know, it's some sort of, you know, deep soulmate bond, which I think most people sort of believe that mostly happens between romantic couples. And I don't buy that. And I think it's interesting in this play, you know, Viola and Orsino have this lovely relationship. But in my way of thinking it, Orsino falls in love with Cesario long before he realizes he's a woman. He falls in love with a person, not a man, not a woman,
right.
A person. And she falls in love with the person, not the Duke, you know, because they're intimate in a way. He talks to her in a way that he doesn't talk to anybody else. You know, she sees someone that he never lets anyone else see. Someone who's quite sensitive, highly poetic, vulnerable, and yet he has all this mask and pretense. And he's mistaking his passion for true intimate bonding, you know. There's that relationship. And then there's also the quite deep love between Sebastian and Viola, you know, the filial.
The twins.
The twins. there's, and I think that bond has to be very strong. You know, my reading of Sebastian is that Viola's sort of taken care of him his whole life. You know, he's a highly emotional person who doesn't really know how to take care of himself. You know, and then and the very few scenes he has to sort of learn to stand on his own.
It's just amazing how these plays transcend centuries of time.
Totally. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, really, really. And that's what struck me the most was how modern this is.
Yeah.
You know, Viola is presented to him as someone who has a very sophisticated understanding of what love really is. You know, the interesting thing to me is that Orsino doesn't really respect Olivia. He doesn't honor her wishes to be left alone. He doesn't listen to her when she says, I can't love you. He thinks he's entitled to her requiting his passions because of how strongly he feels. It's very self-centered.
And not just because of his rank?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because he says to her in his speech, you know, he says to Cesario, make it clear to her. You know, he says, I'm trying to remember the exact lines, but it's basically, the gifts that fortune hath bestowed upon her, I hold as giddily as fortune. But 'tis that miracle and queen of gems that nature pranks her in attracts my soul. He wants her as a person. Well, her beauty, really, is that's all he sees as a person. And I think it's the same for him. He wants to be loved because he's so desperately in love with her.
Yeah.
Because he feels so passionately. It has nothing to do with his rank, I don't think. But that's also a mistake. You know, we feel like when we feel that kind of intensity towards someone that, you know, there's a darkness that happens. There's this weird twist where, like, we feel like we're owed something. We possess them in some way.
Right.
Which we don't.
Exactly.
We don't. That has nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, the reality is that perfectly requited love is relatively rare
very
in this
rare.
World.
It is very rare. There's always that imbalance where somebody wants somebody more than the other person, you know. And I think that's one of the interesting things about the relationship with Viola is that it sneaks up on him, you know. And that's very different from her love for him because, and I don't think it's because she's just submissive and she can't reveal herself as a noble woman and all that. There's something truly noble about what, honorable about what she's doing in the sense that she's honoring what he wants, even though she doesn't think it's right for him, doesn't think Olivia's the right person for him, and feels deeply in love with him, with the person she's come to know that's based on her knowledge of him, not based on some image she has of him. But even given all that, she still is willing to woo somebody else on his behalf because that's what he wants.
Now, what is your role in this play? You're a director, but you're also playing one of the parts.
Sebastian.
Oh, okay.
I'm playing Viola's twin, yeah. So it's been interesting to sort of jump back and forth. That's always really tricky. And Sheridan Johnson, who is playing Viola, is also assistant directing on this. So she's sort of helping me with those scenes that I'm in. Because you can't, I mean, I have a hard time. You know, my very great friend Jerry Ferraccio, who's a marvelous, marvelous director for the Santa Fe Shakespeare Society. He's their coordinator. And he's often found himself in the position where he's had to play one of the parts in the plays he's directing.
Right.
And it's always such, you know, a weird strain to have to go back and forth. You can't really fully do it. It's very difficult. So Sheridan said, listen, you know, when you're doing your scenes, I'll help you. You know, I'll direct them so that I can have an eye on that. But it's been fun working on that relationship too, the brother and the sister relationship, and getting to sort of be in the play as an actor and see this world that's being created by all these wonderful collaborative artists around me, you know.
Now, talk about Sheridan Johnson and Brennan Foster.
So Sheridan Johnson and Brennan Foster are tremendously gifted actors. And the reason why they're so often cast together is they have an amazing intimacy on stage, tremendous vulnerability toward one another, and a pretty immediate, it was like within a, you know, after the table read, you know, I could see the relationship already forming.
Yeah.
You know? So that intimacy was not something, which often is tricky when you're trying to develop with actors, that kind of safety and vulnerability that you can have with one another on stage.
Yeah.
Which in this relationship with Viola and Orsino is crucial because we have literally, it's like two scenes to establish this relationship before the end of the play when he has to fall in love with her when she reveals herself as a woman. And also, even more importantly, there's a whole confrontation that happens before that where he threatens to kill Cesario out of jealousy in order to spite Olivia, because Olivia has professed her love for him.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not following all this, it's okay.
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. Just go see the play. And that's the other thing. It's like, even if you don't really understand Elizabethan English totally, it all comes together when you see it on stage.
Yeah, it's very easily staged, and it's pretty clear. It was really critical to have two actors who could connect very easily and have a lot of honest vulnerability on stage with one another.
Yeah, you know? And they have been working together for quite some time.
Yes, they have. They've done a bunch of plays together. Their most recent, which they won an award for.
Best Stage Couple,
yes.
2013, Albuquerque
right.
Journal.
Yep, for Venus and Fur, which was a stunning production. And then also, they did, I'm trying to remember the other plays they've done. They did Boeing, they did Gibraltar, a number of plays down at Oxdog. But yeah, they've acted together for quite a while now.
That on stage, it's the same in film. Sometimes you've got two terrific actors who are cast as a couple in a movie, and
right.
they have no chemistry whatsoever. Yeah. You just can't fake it.
No, I know. You can't. And they just have the chemistry.
Yeah.
So it's great. It's perfect.
So this is Friday and Saturday at 7 o'clock at the Scottish Rite Temple.
Yes.
Have you worked in that space before?
I have not, but I am very excited because we've gone on a number of visits there. We had a whole production meeting where we got to pick all the backdrops. These backdrops, which are these, hand-painted antiques, there's I think over 40 of them that fly in sets. They have to each fly in individually.
They're already there?
Yeah, they're already there. So it's these are all old historical backdrops that they fly down in sets of five or six to create a look, an outdoor look or an indoor look of some sort of type. And so we there was this giant catalog. So we leafed through this catalog. And was like, well, what can we do? We were kids in a candy store. So we said, well, we need at least five looks. So we picked one for Duke Orsino's house, one for Countess Olivia's house, one for outside, one for a garden. And there's a dungeon too.
So it's Twelfth Night, and of course Twelfth Night referring to the 12 days of Christmas.
Yep.
Quinn Mander is director, and he's an actor in the production, again, presented by Threshold Arts Collective. Now tell us a little bit about them.
Yeah, it's actually Threshold Art Collective, and it's the company that Brennan and Sheridan founded together, and the idea of Threshold was to a couple of things. One was to sort of find ways to work with innovative artists that don't tend to connect with the theatrical arts community, working with local musicians a lot, incorporating them into productions, there's a play that they have in their season that's going to be a heavy multimedia production, so multimedia artists as well, working with, poets and musicians and painters and sculptors, other people, drawing the sort of arts community together and finding ways for them to be involved in productions and that they wouldn't normally be involved in. And also breaking down silos between theatrical groups. So, it's very understandable. When you form a company, you find people that you trust and that you know you can work with. And you tend to stay working with those people because you can trust them. You have, and more than that, there's so many talented actors, both in Albuquerque and Santa Fe, but you find people that you have chemistry with and that share your vision and that you know you can work with. There's that other, it's not just between romantic stage couples, there's chemistry between actors.
Right, and there's not, there's a lot of talented actors in Santa Fe and Albuquerque, but the pool is still pretty small compared to a big city. And
that
so
is true.
You find your people and you stick with them.
Right, exactly. But so the idea is then, well, do we have to do that? Can we break that down? So this production involves actors from both Santa Fe and Albuquerque, many of which have not worked together before. And it's been startling how well it's working out. How well they're integrating together. These people that have never worked together before. And, we've thrown them together in rehearsal with very little preparation time, and they're fantastic. They're doing really well. They play off each other very organically. It's wonderful.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it, and I encourage everybody else to go December 12th and 13th, Friday and Saturday, Scottish Rite Temple. Quinn Mander, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having me, Mary Charlotte. I really appreciate it.
And by the way, if you would like to get tickets, you can go online at thresholdnm.com.